lead and chair of the Transportation Policy and Transit Policy Committee in the House. And what we'd like to do this morning is just start with some introductions. I think most people know each other, but it's always a good idea to go through our introductions. Then we'll do a quick run through of the side-by-sides and hopefully start to get some motions on the table, at least in terms of our common language. And members, this isn't going to be hopefully as complex as our previous transportation policy bills, but we still have a lot of provisions to go through, and it's our hope to at least wrap it up, if not in this first sitting, sometime later today. So with that, let's start with introductions, and we can go around starting from my left here with the chair.
All right, I'm Steve Murphy, and this is Billy Ball behind me, and I don't know where the rest of my staff is, but Bonnie?
Bonnie Berzovsky, Senate Counsel.
Krista Boyd, Senate Fiscal Staff.
Senator Dick Day.
Katie Sieben.
John Dahl.
Amanda Dewar,
Dan Payne, DFL, Focus Research.
Corinne Zewers, Health Fiscal.
Anita Newman, House Research, filling in for Matt Burris.
Marcia Soyles.
Bobby Champion. Gary Morrow.
And Abby Mann, the committee administrator on the House side. And I know that Dan Dwight is here, or was here earlier, and he's with GOP House Research as well. So,
and we have Chris and Jenny here. Chris is back on the phone, and Jenny's back over here. So I think that's everybody. Oh, it's Mr. Sontag, the Republican Senate staffer. They had the baby?
No. He's here.
Been here. He's here a couple days, I think.
What is this with our
I don't know.
Yeah, they did.
It's a good
days
thing.
A couple days
ago, I had the baby.
So. Senator Murphy, did you have any introductory thoughts or comments before we get to the side-by-sides?
Well, I just wanted to reinforce what Representative Hornstein said earlier. We've got a pretty good track record of getting in and out and in transportation, and I don't see a problem with us closing up this bill by the end of working day to day. Always fun.
So, members, why don't we start? I don't know if it's Ms. Borzovsky or Ms. Newman or both. Can start us, walk us through our side-by-sides.
Mr. Chair and members, I think you've got the first.
Mr. Chair and members, starting with the reviser side-by-side text comparison, the bottom of page R1 is Senate language, section 1, and this is actually a change to language that was already enacted in the transportation budget bill to provide a program to help businesses mitigate the effects of transportation construction projects. And it makes just a couple of changes to the language that was enacted. One is on 2.6, it adds the language, or for a rail transit project. As enacted, the language applied only to highway and road projects. This adds rail transit projects. It refers on 2.12 to 2.14 to the Transportation Authority being the Met Council for rail projects in the metro, or the commissioner for other rail transit projects. But then on 2.26, it adds an exception to say that Central Corridor is not subject to this mitigation program. Section 2 on the Senate side designates the new bridge over the Mississippi in St. Cloud on Highway 23. It names it as Granite City Crossing.
Mr. Chair and members, also on page R2, House Section 1 begins a list of prohibited activities at rest areas, which includes trash disposal and travel and household consumption of alcohol, draining your travel trailers or RVs, or camping, and provides penalties for those. Section 2 on page R3 corrects a highway number reference to the Clearwater County Veterans Memorial Highway. Section 3 designates a Veterans Memorial Highway on Highway 200 between the North Dakota border and the city of Manoman. And page R4 provides for a Becker County Veterans Memorial County near Detroit Lakes.
Mr. Chair and members, on R4, section 3 is, and section 4 on the next page is part of the same initiative, and this amends the Trunk Highway Bridge Project, the program, for MnDOT, and requires that bridge projects have to include, after fiscal year 10 and later, bicycle and pedestrian accommodations if the bridge is in a city, if it links other paths and trails, and it provides for exceptions, certain exceptions, when these accommodations are not required. And then section 4 also requires that trunk highway bridges have to comply with ADA accessibility requirements.
On page R5, House Section 4 and Senate Section 5 deal with the corporate deputy registers by lifting the sunset, and those are the same provisions.
Mr. Chair and members, on R7, Section 6 authorizes deputy registrars to collect a surcharge on statutory fees, taxes, and filing fees, and that would be to recover the cost of processing credit and debit card transactions. On page R8 and R9, Section 7 and 8 on the Senate side, those eliminate language relating to household income at or below 50% of state median income. And what this relates to is when a vehicle is impounded, the impound lot operator has to send a notice to the vehicle owner giving certain information. And this has to do with the contents of the notice, because certain people who meet certain qualifications have the right to retrieve contents. And this takes out that one qualification of household income at 50% or below for retrieval of contents from impounded vehicles.
On R9, House Section 6 provides a definition of a mini truck as a vehicle with four wheels and enclosed cab with an electric motor with a power of 7,500 watts or less, or internal combustion engine with a piston displacement capacity of 660 cubic centimeters or less, and a weight between 900 and 2,200 pounds.
And on R9, Section 9, and this goes through page R11, this looks like a lot of new language, but it's actually transferred from a repealed section, and it states the conditions under which a towing authority may tow a motor vehicle without statutory limitations. And that's basically if a vehicle is left in a dangerous place, and there are some other conditions as well. And these are all in current law. This is just being moved from another section.
Page R11, House Section 7 provides for local units of government being able to designate which of their roadways that a mini truck can operate on. The time of operation provides for these vehicles making highway crossing, how traffic laws are applied, and insurance provisions. On R12, Section 8 sets forth the required equipment that mini trucks have to have, which is at least two headlamps, two tail lamps, turn signals, external mirrors, windshields, seat belts, and a parking brake.
Section 9 on the House side and 10 on the Senate side are almost identical, and that's the Senate added a little amendment in committee, and this is the intersection gridlock, and it provides for a petty misdemeanor penalty for somebody who drives out into the intersection and blocks cross traffic. And the Senate added language on 9.31, controlled by a semaphore, to limit the application of this provision to signalized intersections.
On page R13, Section 10 of the House, provides that buses throughout the state would be able to use the shoulder, and in line 7.25 to 7.29 sets forth which type of buses would be authorized to do that. Page R14, section 11 of both the Senate and the House, part of that was passed in the Transportation Finance Bill, but the Senate has an additional provision.
Mr. Chair and members, it was just enacted, actually I think it was in the Public Safety Bill, but on section 11 on the Senate side, when we're on R14, lines 10.12 and 10.13, this is language that is Senate-only language, and that allows the mounting of safety monitoring equipment on the windshield. So it provides for one more exception to the general prohibition of putting anything on the windshield between the driver and the windshield. On R15, or I guess the very beginning of it is on the bottom of R14, section 12 provides that certain cargo tank vehicles are accepted from weight restrictions imposed by the commissioner, and that's seasonal load restrictions. In order to take advantage of this exemption, the cargo tank vehicle has to be delivering propane or fuel oil for heating. It can't be filled more than 50%. It has to utilize the forward tank compartments, document the empty weight of the cargo tank vehicle, and they have, to the extent practicable, these vehicles that are exempt must complete their deliveries on restricted roads by noon and before the last week of April. On R15, section 13, Senate language, this is the first of three provisions. They're not consecutive, but this is the first one. This was requested by the department to go back to a recently enacted provisions that expand the ignition interlock program and just to provide for a special effective date. Otherwise, there's a month lapse in this ignition interlock program. So section 13 is the first of those sections. Sections 14 through, I believe, 24 on the Senate side all create the enhanced driver's license program. Section 14 and 15 define enhanced driver's license and enhanced identification card. Section 16 states who is not eligible to receive or to apply for an enhanced driver's license. Section 17 requires that enhanced ID card and driver's license be included on application forms. Section 18 provides for the fee, which is $15 over the regular classes of driver's license in each case. Then jumping ahead to section 19 requires certain information about the enhanced card and license on the application form. Section 20 on R20 requires applicants for enhanced driver's license to comply with the selective service registration requirements. Section 21 states that the enhanced ID card may not be issued to anyone under 16 or anyone who is not a resident of Minnesota or a citizen of the United States. Section 22 provides for EDL security, and the card has to have the best available anti-counterfeit laminate technology. It may include radio frequency identification technology. It may not include biometric data or information other than citizenship status. Then section 23 further refers to the EDL and enhanced ID card. In the section of law concerning driver's licenses and ID cards. And finally, section 24 accepts the enhanced driver's license from the provisions in statute that allow for an applicant to wear certain headgear or have a certain photograph taken. So this would be a different, the EDL would have different rules that apply to the photographic image.
And on page R22, House Section 8 is an expansion of the Dimler Amendment and provides that for speeds of 55 or 60 miles an hour, there's a 10-mile-an-hour window before a violation go on your record. Under current law, it's 10 miles at 55 miles an hour or 5 miles in excess of 60.
And on pages R23 and R24, Senate language, we skipped over the masking provision. That has been enacted already in the transportation budget bill. Then Senate-only language, sections 25 and 26. This was an initiative that has to do with cumulative driver's license suspensions, and it provides that there is a misdemeanor penalty, but one cannot be suspended for driving after a suspension if the original suspension was for the reason of unpaid fines or failure to appear in court. Then sections 27 and 28 are the second and third sections I referred to earlier, where we've just added an effective date to the enacted expansion of the ignition interlock program. Section 29, beginning on R25, adds references to including facilities for walking and bicycling in the department's mission, the Department of Transportation's mission. Section 30 also adds language to the section of law that establishes the goals of the state transportation system. And there are several changes throughout Section 30. Section 31 on R27 deals with reducing vehicle miles driven. It defines per capita vehicle miles driven, and it states a goal to reduce the levels of per capita vehicle miles driven by at least 15% from 2005 to 2025. On Section 32 amends the MnDOT mission section of law, and it includes a reference to climate and reduction in greenhouse gas emissions. Section 33 on page R28 requires the commissioner to include in the statewide rail plan a study of commuter transit in the Little Crow Transit Way and the Sioux Trail Transit Way. Section 34 establishes the Minnesota Council on Transportation Access, which was funded in the enacted transportation budget bill. It establishes the council in subdivision 2. It prescribes a list of the duties of the council, and subdivision 3 prescribes the membership. There are legislative members as well as executive members and members representing other boards and groups. The subdivision 4 requires a report each year until the section expires in 2013.
On R31, House Section 14 would amend language that was enacted earlier this session and directs that the commissioner for the purposes of passenger rail to maintain all of the federal railway labor protective provisions, including the Railway Labor Act, Federal Employers Liability Act, Railroad Retirement and NUI, and Railroad Safety and OSHA provisions.
And Mr. Chair and members, I think the reason that this language was compared with the enacted language is because it has the same coding. These are new language sections, and they have the same section number, 174.632. So if the conference committee were to adopt House language here, we would either have to change that coding or else make it clear that the House language is intended to supersede the language that was already enacted in the transportation budget bill. Page R31 Senate language, section 35, going on to R32, provides that the Commissioner of Transportation may utilize design build in constructing the high-speed passenger rail line connecting Chicago La Crosse and St. Paul Union Depot with a possible future connection to Minneapolis.
And on R32, House Section 15 adds two members of labor organizations to the commuter rail corridor coordinating committee. Mm-hmm.
Page R32 and R33, Section 36 requires the Commissioner of Transportation to apply to the federal government for certain railroad safety technology grant funding, and it provides in detail how the Commissioner must solicit and prioritize grant requests, and that the participating railroads must provide the 20% non-federal match.
And R33, House Sections 16 and 17, and Senate Sections 37 and 38 provide definitions of motor carrier of railroad employees and small vehicle passenger service, and that is the same language in both bills. Section on page R34, section 18 of the House and 39 of the Senate is the motor carrier of railroad employees, and the substance of the language is the same. The structure and how it was coded, I believe, is the difference. Page R36, House section 19 is the Lifesaver program. It directs the Commissioner of Public Safety to assist local law enforcement in developing and operating the Lifesaver Rapid Response Program, and that's the electronic tracking of senior citizens with memory issues, persons with autism, Down syndrome, Alzheimer's disease, etc. That provision sets up a task force, requires a report to the legislature. R37, House Section 20, is the Ralph Loans, I believe the name is, and it removes the requirement that there be a hardship element before those loans would become available.
On page R38 and R39, Section 40 on the Senate side amends a section of law that allows Metropolitan Council buses to use parkways for regular route service under certain circumstances, and who has to consent. And what this does is it adds the possibility that if the designated parkway is adjacent to the city of Minneapolis, a representative of the contiguous city has to be involved in the group that gives consent for the use.
On R39, House Section 21 deals with the extinguishment of a town interest in a town road and provides that that's nullified not only if the state or political subdivision has constructed a road or bridge improvement, but also if it has been funded by the state or political subdivision. R40, House Section 22, allows for Highway 19 in New Prague to be closed once during the year for the Dzinski Festival. Sorry.
Page R40, Section 42 authorizes an additional deputy registrar of motor vehicles for the city of Farmington, notwithstanding the statute and rules that require deputy registrar offices to be a certain distance apart from others and that restrict or that provide for annual volume of transactions. And this section is dependent on local approval. Page R41, Section 43 requires MnDOT to submit a final environmental impact statement to the Federal Highway Administration by the end of 2009 that for a project as specified in the section, and the commissioner must perform this within existing appropriations that would otherwise be allocated to District 7. And R41, Section 44 requires the Commissioner of Public Safety and MnDOT together to study the mandatory 24-hour use of vehicle lighting. And it specifies what must be included in the study and when the report must be made to the legislature. Section 45, beginning at the bottom of R41 and continuing on R42, requires the Commissioner of Transportation to issue permits to allow construction of an interchange between Trunk Highway 52 and 65th Street in Rochester. It requires the City of Rochester to pay up to $5 million for the cost of the intersection. Section 46 directs the Commissioner of Transportation to work with the State of Wisconsin to submit grant application requests for high-speed rail, passenger rail, linking Chicago La Crosse and the Union Depot in St. Paul with a possible future connection to Minneapolis. Section 47 is part of the enhanced driver's license provision directing the Commissioner of Public Safety to enter into an agreement with Homeland Security to develop the license and ID card that would be acceptable under federal regulations. Section 48, still on R42, authorizes rulemaking for the Commissioner of Public Safety in connection with the Enhanced Driver's License Program. Section 49 on R42 and R43, paragraph A repeals the hazardous materials and hazardous waste registration program that is currently run by MnDOT, and B relates back to the towing, and this repeals the subdivisions that require police to, or excuse me, that require a 4-hour waiting period after ticketing of a vehicle before it can be towed. And effective dates on the Senate side relate to enhanced driver's license program.
And the effective dates on the House side relate to the mini vehicles provision.
Okay. Well, that's concludes the side-by-sides. Members, we can take questions on any particular sections. We're not going to do motions yet, but these are members' questions of either Ms. Newman or Ms. Berezovsky about any of the provisions on either the House or the Senate side. This would be an opportunity if you have any clarifications or technical questions you'd like to ask. Representative Champion.
For the Senate side, on the business mitigation provision, it is my understanding that there is supposed to be an effective date for transit to be a part of the business mitigation program in 2011. Is that consistent with your understanding, or is that something that you have to make a motion for and just consistent with your understanding?
Ms. Berezovsky.
Mr. Chair, I believe that there was discussion about that,
Representative Champion.
I think we had representative from Met Council, Mr. Shetman, who's going to say
okay.
Mr. Chair, members, my name is Judd Shetland, Government Affairs Director for the Metropolitan Council, and Representative Champion is correct. We had this conversation with Senator Torres Ray last week, and the effective date for transit was going to be 2011, so that future projects could begin building that cost into their project budget. So, otherwise, we're good with the language, and I appreciate your help on that.
Okay. Thank you. Members, we're not...
I'm sorry, Mr. Shetland. I didn't hear exactly what you're saying. If you could repeat that real quick, I'd appreciate it.
Mr. Shetland.
Great. Mr. Chair, Senator Murphy, last week I talked to Senator Torres Ray about this particular issue and the concerns we had regarding Central Corridor, and she agreed to exempt Central Corridor, and we also agreed that an effective date for 2011 for transit would be appropriate so that future transit projects could build that cost into their budget.
Thank you.
And I think Senator Dibble was part of that discussion as well with Senator Torres Ray. And I think if the committee would agree to that language, we'd be great. And thank you, Representative Champion, for bringing it up.
And just a reminder, members, and and those in the public. We aren't going to do any motions quite yet. We're just asking for some clarifications of the letter. So, but we'll keep that in mind. Ms. Mirazovsky.
Mr. Chair, I just wanted to clarify, too, that I think when we were asked to put this language together, it was in the sense of a placeholder because the discussions were still going on, and probably if this is adopted, what the final form would look like is an amendment to the enacted language. So it probably won't look exactly like this, but it could certainly include an effective date for the paragraph 8, the subdivision 1 changes of July 1, 11. Is that the effective date that's needed?
It's my understanding that it would be July 1. I'm the House author for the same year, so that's what I understand. I probably want to make sure that I understand.
Are there any further questions of any of our...
I have a question.
Yes. Representative Swales.
On R40 related to the registrar of motor vehicles for the city of Arlington, I don't remember that we listened to this particular bill.
No, there, Representative Swales, the house, there's no comparable house.
My understanding is that these offices are, there's a mileage, a boundary, or radius that they need to serve, and that a lot of the motor vehicle offices are stressed out right now. I'm just wondering if there's going to be a volume of business that would justify creating this particular office. So that's my question.
Senator Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chairman, Representative Swales. This was a Senator Pariseau amendment that was put on the Senate floor. Senator Pariseau made a fairly good argument that the area, the growth in the area, would be more than enough to support three deputy registrars, two, one on each side, one in the middle, to support those three business activities. And, you know, I've heard some discussion to the contrary since then, but, you know, for the most part, we got a letter from the city saying that they would really like this. It's a good time to do it. They're just completing their new city hall, you know, so they've got the space available, and they have a design that they want to put in there. So that's why we put it in the bill. Right.
Thank you, Senator Murphy. Are there any further questions from committee members on any of the provisions on either side? Okay. Well, members, Senator Murphy has requested, I think there's some Senate business that needs to take place here in the next hour, and we're going to probably convene on the House floor as well. And so I would move that we recess until 12 noon. This is going to be the day, unfortunately, members, some stopping and starting, but it's really our goal to wrap this up today and to try to wrap it up at a reasonable hour. So. We may get interrupted occasionally for calls of the House and Senate, but it's our intention to just kind of convene at noon, start with some motions, and try to get through as much as we can. So with that, our conference committee, Senator Murphy.
And Mr. Chairman, and once again to the folks who said that they were going to write letters to members about the festival and the Highway 14 and some of the other things, make sure that you talk with those members during this break, because it doesn't look like all of those issues have been resolved by yet.
So with that, members will stand in recess till 12 noon. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.